Oh, you made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say, a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to shared rules, norms, and respect, we're not even obligated to consider your opinion any longer, because the social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan, the Worshipin' Dionysus Man, sipping on some science today, welcoming any new listeners just joining us. We're here having a good time. We hope you have a good time, too. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We'll be talking about the one ingredient heart doctors are begging people to add to their pizza.
Ooh, I'm having pizza for dinner. I need that one.
You need to know. You need to know. Your heart doctor is begging you to know this one ingredient, but you have to wait till the end to find out.
I hope I have it on hand.
The identity of the ingredient will shock you.
Is it masturbation?
Whoa! Left turn, left turn. As always, I'm joined by some fascinating guests in the lounge today. That's Ron, the geologist apologist with the masturbation line. Hey, Ron, how are you doing over there? How are you doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right.
Everything okay? Yeah. Also my lovely sister Amber, who loves the woo-woo and thinks she's always right too. Amber, how's your week going?
It's going pretty good so far, considering we're only a few hours into it.
Oh, well, the week either starts on Sunday or ends on Sunday. We got a really fun and informative show for you today, brought to you by Rose Apothecary. Not just a general store, but kind of like a specific store. We're going to take a quick look back at the federal government seizing the headquarters of a national retail chain on April 26th, 1944. We've got some hot science news. We've got the oldest South Pacific ancient city has been discovered. We've got some self-healing biodegradable plastic that's been developed, completely new type of plastic. And there's also a new machine that's on the market that you can purchase, put just about anywhere on the planet. It will pull water out of the air. We're going to talk about that. We got some snake oil involving country music legend Reba McEntire.
Oh, you're going to go there?
I'm going there. We got a rousing rendition of Fact Check in Time today. And of course, we'll wrap things up with a feel-good story that I definitely read before I hit record on this episode. We're going to encourage you to reach out to us at halfcocktails@gmail.com. Maybe you want to send us a text or voice message to 443-499-8253. Maybe just drop a comment on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, one of those wonderful places. But for now, we're going to hop in that time machine. Let's go.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yesteryear in a time machine.
So this was news to me. Apparently, this is a watershed moment in labor relations in the United States. In the 1940s, FDR actually had the National Guard forcibly seize the headquarters of Montgomery Ward's, the largest retail chain at the time. It would be like Biden seizing the corporate headquarters of Walmart.
Yeah,
that would be dark Brandon time.
Dark Brandon indeed. And I think FDR was kind of in the right here. I don't think he was wrong to do it. I don't think this was government overreach. I think this was something he had to do to keep the war machine going. And that was why they got away with it, why it's not considered to be draconian, totalitarian government overreach, is because legitimately 1944, we're trying to win the war in Europe and the Pacific. And why don't I just back up and give you the context? So as we know, World War II, early 40s. Big, big, big shift in all of our industry. We had to mobilize everything to change from supporting a country and normal capitalist behavior to, hey, we're a military. That's what we do. That's all we do. That's the military industrial complex that was not in place before World War II, we shifted into it. And so companies like Montgomery Ward, they might have been making dresses or T-shirts, but now they're making uniforms and boots, right? Because, you know, all of our factories had to churn out military equipment. We had to get vehicles. We had to get bullets.
Right, like, but Ford plants turning out bombers.
Exactly, exactly. But all the way down to, like, we need bandages.
Right, the basics.
We need canteens so they could drink water. We need meals, packaged meals. So, obviously, Montgomery Ward, giant retail behemoth, became a giant wartime production company. The head leader CEO guy, his name was Sewell Avery, and he oversaw that transformation as it shifted that focus from selling their consumer products to supplying the military. So they were making the uniforms, boots, they were making artillery shells, they were making aircraft components, but all of this really strained their workforce. If you can imagine, all of the healthiest, strongest men, they got drafted. They're gone. So the workforce at the time naturally had to consist mainly of women, older men, rural populations, all got pulled into this giant manufacturing apparatus that was World War II. And a lot of marginalized communities weren't eligible for military service, get pulled in to work in these factories. Grueling hours, unsafe working conditions, wages that were failing to keep pace with the rising cost of living. The cost of goods during a giant global conflict like World War II just go up, you know, like we're seeing now. Like, supply chain issues. Everything gets, so many things get diverted to other areas that would be normally going into peacetime prosperity production.
Right.
Well, that's a nice alliteration. That just happened.
You should trademark that.
Yeah. Verbal trademark, Dan. Half cocktails.
Witness.
So Roosevelt in 1942 establishes the National War Labor Board. And it was a part of the government that was in charge of like arbitrating disputes between labor and management. So the government can make sure for all the production continues without interruption, right? So if you're having problems, your management or your labor, you go to the National War Labor Board. They step in and they say, all right, this is what the decision is. Everybody move forward. End of story. No appeals. This is how it is.
Wow.
Montgomery Ward and Sewell Avery did not like that. They didn't appreciate that, and they didn't feel like it was legitimate power. It didn't hold legitimate power over them. He's always clashing with them on wage issues, working hours, and even union recognition. He's like, we don't even recognize that union. Yeah, they're not here, which is a weird tack to take. But hey, that's where they were at. So no matter how hard the National War Labor Bureau tried to mediate conflicts between Montgomery Ward workers and Montgomery Ward, Montgomery Ward was not changing. They weren't taking the stuff and accepting it and doing what they were recommending. Sewell Avery was a very vocal opponent to unions and organized labor. And he saw government intervention, totally unwelcome intrusion on his company affairs. Typical capitalist arguing, regulations bad, stifles the innovation of Montgomery Ward and its ability to compete.
So cliche.
Innovate in what? Clothing?
If you don't have Montgomery Ward's innovative pricing strategy,
yeah,
you're not getting good shirts and shoes.
I mean, I remember shopping at Montgomery Ward's. In fact, I think I got my very first desktop computer from Montgomery Ward's.
Really?
But I don't remember them being anything particularly special, like every other store.
They weren't, but they were in the 40s. But, you know, right, by the 90s, 50 years later,
that's true,
things had shifted. And they were more, they were just a common mall anchor. It was like, oh, yeah, Montgomery Ward's or Dillard's.
I wonder how much of this wartime's tensions in the company like affected their future?
It's a really good question. It's a really good question. So tensions between Montgomery Ward and the government were increasing as more and more people started to participate in labor strikes and protests at various Montgomery Ward facilities because they were working too many hours. They wanted wage increases. They wanted their unions to be recognized. So basically, like a company, if it doesn't recognize the union, it won't sit down and negotiate. But if it recognizes the union, then it's, you know, it'll sit down. The union rep can say, hey, we need to talk, and they'll listen. But by not even recognizing, like, no, we don't even recognize you, not let them in the door, they're not even able to negotiate. Kind of like how North Korea doesn't have a seat at the United Nations.
Okay.
Like, we don't even recognize you, right? Like, it's just shuts them out. So it kind of set the stage for this big showdown between Sewell Avery, Montgomery Ward, and the federal government, which the Roosevelt decided to invoke the Smith-Conley Act.
And what was that?
Which was...
What, you don't know that off the top of your head?
I thought I had it open already. It
should all be memorized.
It's something he had passed the summer before in 1943, a year and a half before. It was created after 400,000 coal miners had their wages lowered because of wartime inflation.
Oh, wow.
So they weren't getting wage increases while inflation happened. And so they went on strike because they wanted a $2 a day wage increase. And so the Smith-Conley Act, or also called the War Labor Disputes Act, it allowed the government to seize and operate industries threatened by or under strike that would interfere with war production. And it prohibited unions from making contributions in federal elections as well. Yeah, and they had not... part of not a part of the landscape today, right?
No,
right. How'd that switch?
This first got used when the Fair Employment Practices Commission ordered the Philadelphia Transportation Company to hire black people as motormen in Philadelphia. There was a labor union in Philadelphia of transit employees that let a sick out. That became known as the Philadelphia Transit Strike of 1944 for 6 days. And wow. Roosevelt sent 8,000 army troops to seize and operate the transit system. And
holy cow.
He threatened to draft any of those people that were striking if they didn't get back to work.
Wow.
Which did break the strike, and they did go back to work. So Roosevelt wasn't fucking around.
Seriously.
When he said,
man, we're at war here. It's, you know, some things have to get done.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about how that all went down and how today's society would react if we had similar situations going on and the government was stepping in that manner. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I almost feel like our society has become so self-absorbed that people would be like, yeah, we're at war, who cares?
Yeah, yeah, nobody would blink.
Not my problem.
I don't work there.
Exactly. I don't take the bus.
I will tell you, if I'm on strike and we're at war and they're like, hey, if you don't get back to work, we're going to draft your ass. I'm going back to work.
Hell yes.
Right? I would.
That's a pretty good threat. He already has the Smith-Conley Act in his pocket. They're still being defiant, Montgomery Ward is. And so he fucking moves in with the troops and U.S. Marshals. They descended on their main factory in Chicago with orders to seize control of the facility. And believe it or not, the sight of armed soldiers entering the plant did send shockwaves through the company and the broader business community. Because this wasn't like Philadelphia, you know, this wasn't a government railway. This was the means of production. Yeah.
Well, this is something that never had really been done before, right? So this was like shocking that they would go this far because it hadn't been done before.
So inside the plant, workers were working as the army just kind of starts filing in.
Wow. Can you imagine?
You're right.
Making your widgets, you know, in your own zone.
Are those army guys or am I still lit from lunch? Sewell Avery barricaded himself in his office.
Wow.
So imagine the CEO. He's got like the couch and the desk leaned up against the doors so they can't break it in.
Oh my gosh.
And they're on the outside. They're like, sir, we are the federal government and the army, and we're here with this court order. Like, you've got to surrender the factory. And he's on the other side leaning against all his furniture in the door going, no, you're not legitimate. Fake news.
I can live in here forever.
I can live in here forever.
He probably had a full stock fridge.
I'm going to poop in a coffee can. It's okay.
That paper's not legitimate. The feds can't take over my factory.
Sovereign citizens.
Sovereign citizen. Look, your flag has the wrong number of stars, so you can't take this factory over. It was a highly, highly publicized moment. They forcibly removed him from his office.
Wow.
And carried him out to the paddy wagon. Didn't even walk out. They fucking carried him.
You've been 86.
Badass. Like,
once they removed him, right? They didn't waste any time. They took full control over Montgomery Ward. They put federal managers in place to oversee production, ensure the plant continued to fulfill its obligations to the war effort. It was a big move that saying the government is, we're not fucking around. We're going to make sure this manufacturing and production part of our war effort stays in place. We're making it happen.
Wow.
So they brought in a lot of changes to the workplace. They started working closely with the union reps and the workers to address longstanding grievances and improve the conditions. Wages were increased, safety measures implemented, and employee morale turned around.
Nice.
This is why I know that there is a path in the future that doesn't need capitalism. The moment they took we own this, it's ours, individualist out of it, and said, no, this is not for you to make profit. This factory is to produce XYZ for the war effort. And then it was like, oh, you're not getting enough to survive? Okay, now you can have enough. We'll take it out of the profits. Oh, you need safety measures? Okay, we'll spend on that.
Right.
It's worth it.
So it sounds like in the end it was good, right?
That's what I'm saying. For the workers and the country, like, stepping in and having federal managers actually improved Montgomery Ward. Right. Like this whole idea that self-serving individualist interests leads to the greatest good is the biggest lie of capitalism that I've ever witnessed in my lifetime. And it's really sad.
I don't know. I think I look at today's compilation of national leaders and wonder if that would even be feasible now, like if the government could even take over and make things better, because I feel like the government is so full of self-serving individuals now that there is no consideration for the greater good in many, many cases.
I totally agree that our government is no longer functioning to serve the best interests of the people. Our government, because of capitalism, has become its own money machine.
Yeah.
However, I absolutely also believe that there are plenty of intelligent, good people that would make the right decisions. I think the good in humanity is stronger than the bad.
I agree.
It's just we're structured to encourage the bad, and it's a real tragedy.
Right, just like those recent studies showing that being a bully in school makes you some more successful.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if you read that article, but
I did not.
The people that were bullies in school actually ended up being higher wage earners as adults.
Well, yeah, because they bully everybody on their way to the top.
Yeah.
Being a bully works in our system.
Yeah, let's not put that out there. I'm a high school teacher. Let's dial that back a little.
Well, no, we need to acknowledge what's happening before in order to address it. It shouldn't work.
And, no, it definitely shouldn't.
When we have a laundry list of politicians that fail the kindergarten rule of civil conduct, what do you expect, right? Our leadership isn't held to those standards.
Exactly.
So how can we expect everybody else to be held to those standards?
That's true. Very, very true. Gosh, and I wonder how we even rein that in, because today's youth see that those things are effective. I mean, there's still some really amazing youth out there that are more socially conscious than I think most adults. But there's still those few that come from families that encourage that kind of competitive, I deserve it, you don't kind of behavior that leads to the bullying in high school.
Everyone for themselves.
So I don't know how do we flip this? How do we fix it or change it? Or
we are always one generation away from change.
Right.
But huge change takes many generations.
Right.
As Pharaoh, what's his name, who tried to worship the sun instead of dead pharaohs. You can have absolute power and say, no, the religion is worshiping the sun now. And as soon as you die, everybody goes, okay, we're done with that nonsense, right? Okay, back to the nonsense of worshiping our past dead emperors.
Back to the previous nonsense.
Yeah, back to the previously scheduled nonsense.
Make it great again.
Yeah, speaking of previously scheduled nonsense. So the labor struggles of the 40s that culminated in the government taking over a Montgomery ward. It's still, that shit's still happening today, right? Today, as in the past, workers are still trying to fight against inflation, trying to get fair wages, safe working conditions. We just had Florida be like, no, you can't have mandatory get your ass in the shade, it's too hot laws.
Right?
That's bullshit. Don't tell me what to do.
Don't tell me what to do with my workers. Like, what?
If I want to kill them, I can.
Right.
Truly appalling. And there's so little disregard for human decency.
There is. But we actually have a president like FDR today siding with labor unions and promoting a lot of labor unions over big business. And that makes definitely something that aligns with what I like to see.
I agree.
I am all for a business being able to make a profit, but we have seen a steady shift in maximizing the pay at the top and minimizing the pay at the bottom.
Yeah. Profits at the expense of the people is not sustainable for very long.
It's really, really not. It's really, really not.
It's all about appeasing shareholders.
Right. Which is why I don't think our government looks out for us. I think too many of them are shareholders in whichever way they can be.
Important stuff and why I love hopping in the time machine, but now I think it's time for some news.
Ooh, yes.
It's time for some news from our point of view. We'd even be glad if we could have a lap or two. It's time for
the oldest city in the South Pacific was constructed in Tonga in 300 AD.
Oh, wow.
I remember that.
1,700-year-old lost city on the island of Tongatapu in the Tonga Island chain. It is 12 miles from a large city today. So I read the article and thought, it's the same city. That's a rounding error on maps until the 20th century, 21st century.
Right.
On a globe, I can't even move my finger 12 miles.
Right. 12 miles isn't that much.
Right. Right. They used LIDAR to find the mounds and actually map out this giant urban structure. So they didn't, you know, societies that didn't have access to a lot of quarries and a lot of rock didn't build stone cities. They built mound cities out of earth,
right.
You know, clay and adobe,
right,
kind of stuff.
What they had.
So what they had, right? What they could use.
Just like the mound builders in the central part of the country, Cahokia.
Right.
All those ancient ruins and their connections with Mesoamerica. It's pretty amazing.
Right, right. Just like those people in the Americas. Like the Tongans, to the fucking on a boat and bring back bricks when you could just build mud domes, right? Why are you gonna travel 200 miles to the mountain to get rocks? Right. This isn't Egypt where you just float them down the Nile. That's insane.
Right. It just makes economic sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just fucking economics. So this new city that they found dates the old brings back the oldest city 700 years older than previously thought, pushes it back. So
what was the previous oldest city? Was that correct?
I believe so. Yes. The articles I was reading aren't saying specifically, and I didn't do that much research. And I was putting the episode together. The current capital of Tonga has a population density of about 15 people per hectare. The ancient city they're calling, forgive me for the bad pronunciation, Mua, it was 6 people per hectare. So it was about half as dense as their densest city today, a modern dense city.
Pretty darn dense for a very ancient city.
Yes. Wow. Yes. I mean, you're like right on top of each other, right? I mean, obviously modern people will be like, well, they got a big yard. But yeah, for ancient peoples, this was clustered together, right? Yeah, I am always fascinated with how industrious ancient peoples can be. And I have like, because our mother had us watch Steven Spielberg's Jaws all the time.
It was her favorite movie.
Terrified of the ocean. Impressed by the Pacific peoples, especially the ones that get on the boats and settle these island chains and like, oh yeah, we'll just get on a boat for a couple months. A raft.
We're going to sail that way on the hope that there's land that way.
Right. Oh, yeah. Always. Just Pacific Islanders. Really, really impressive. And to find out that they weren't, I mean, we knew that they were obviously around at 380, but that, to know that they had a city, not a village, not a town, a city.
An urban environment.
Like, that's a very successful people. And the fact that it's still populated today. Sorry, 12 miles away isn't far enough. It just slowly moved over the years. That's all. People went, oh, you know what? If we went over here, we'd have better water sources. Guaranteed. Right. Guaranteed it was water. It's always water.
It usually is.
Anyway. All right. You know what else caught my eye when Ron sent it to me? Scientists have developed a plastic material that's actually self-healing with heat.
Wow.
And on top of that, it biodegrades in the ocean instead of forming a giant Pacific garbage patch. They're calling it, it was researchers out of University of Tokyo. They're calling it VPR, which it uses an epoxy resin called vitrimer, which is a new type of plastic. And then it combines it with another, what was it? Where is it? This is why I need to take better notes. I thought it was right here. They add polyrotaxane. Yeah, they add polyrotaxane molecules into this vitrimer, and it makes a new compound that not only like I said heals. So like they make your plastic case of your phone, and you drop it and it scratches.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just apply some heat to it, and it would just go back to its original shape.
Wow.
Like that's my explanation of what they described.
Right. That's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah. Like I think they were talking about, like, you imagine a road that, like, got a pothole and you came and just gave it some heat and whoop, back to the road. Although, I don't know if you want a road with the stuff if it's seawater soluble. but it actually has, it has shape memory is the point. And the heat can return it to that shape. And I guess it's, they've proven partial biodegradability because they only reported 25% biodegradation in weight when submerged in seawater for 30 days. So no word on, obviously, if it has a total breakdown, because, you know, they just invented it. They haven't been able to watch it forever.
Wow.
But it can be also chemically recycled faster and easier than the typical vitrimer compound.
Oh, wow.
So as we were just talking about last week, how recycling is snake oil, only 5-10% of what you throw in the recycle bin actually gets recycled.
Right.
Having plastic that is actually recyclable would be a huge game changer.
Absolutely. Game
changer.
It might actually start healing our earth a little bit.
Oh my goodness. With science, it's possible, but we all have to, you know, get together and decide to do it.
All right.
Decide to stop killing each other.
To let go of some greed in order to be more socially conscious.
The greed for material things and power is the root of so much pain and suffering.
Oh, for sure.
All over the place. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe someday we'll have a religion that will guide us to the stars. I don't know. I'd love to see it.
One can only hope and dream.
One can only hope. All right. The last story we'll talk about before we get on to some other fun stuff. Researchers have made a big breakthrough. Researchers, a company now sells a company now sells a device that pulls water out of the air. It's called the Water Cube. It's made by a company called Genesis Systems. I'll gladly talk about it, even if it's an ad. If you need water somewhere, please buy their product. I don't get paid anything for it. I know it's an ad, but it's a good ad. I'm really excited about this.
I mean, yeah, this machine is moisture farming.
Yes.
Yeah.
Star Wars style moisture farming.
120 gallons of water a day in almost any climate.
Wow.
Yeah, that's 120 gallons a day is more than you need for you and your family. That's
a small village.
Right?
If you manage your water properly, that's a small village and, you know, remote arid lands that otherwise would be in trouble. That's pretty amazing.
So is that, because I don't know a whole lot about the science of this. Is that like long-term sustainable, or are we going to run out like we do with groundwater that's, you know, disappearing?
Okay. So the machine itself goes for about 10 to 15 years, but pulling water out of the air and putting it into the ground, yes, there could be. Obviously, there could always be a point where you've disrupted the system too far one way or the other. But I really think the danger would be losing water to the outer space.
Mm.
Right. And I think from the article I read on this topic, it said something like the moisture that's in the atmosphere, which these devices capture their moisture from, contains something like 400 million times or something crazy like that, the amounts of water than all the water on the surface of the Earth.
Wow.
So there's a hell of a lot of moisture in that atmosphere. I'm sure my number's wrong there, but it was a huge number.
Yeah. The fact that it's this machine that can pull this water out of this, you know, just out of the atmosphere, it's the size of an HVAC system.
Wow. Right.
I mean, that's totally doable. Especially imagine this as like an off-grid living solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. It operates on a 220-volt connection.
You get this, a solar array, you don't need anything. You're good.
Fantastic.
You don't need anything. You don't need, and it costs 20 grand, which is the price of a well in a lot of places.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right? Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it lasts 10 to 15 years. So absolutely perfect off-grid solution anywhere. Anywhere. literally anywhere, boom, solar. And one of these, you've got water and electricity, which means you can live, you can grow things in a hydroponics bay if you're in the fucking Arctic. Actually, that's probably the one place.
Right, I think the cold, wet climates are places this doesn't do well in. But, you know, that those are not necessarily the places with the highest demand for additional drinking water resources.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This could really, really help a lot of people. Okay. Before we talk about snake oil today, I'd like to take a moment to talk about the amazing gift shop over at halfcocktails.com/shop. Have you ever opened up your closet to find it empty time and time again? Walking outside thinking, hey, it's cold. Why hasn't someone invented something to keep me warm? Well, Half-Cocked scientists have just released a game changer, successfully creating branded t-shirts and hoodies in the Half-Cocked laboratories. And they didn't stop there. Bucket hats, magnets, canvas-wrapped wall art. And I know some people might not want you to put canvas-wrapped wall up on your art, on your wall. Ah, ha! This is what happens when you drink too much before you record. This is the dangers of 4 p.m. No,
putting the cocktails in half cocktails.
Yeah, they might not like the idea of you putting canvas wrapped wall art up on your wall. And those people are called minimalists. And I say, fuck them. You buy that art. You put it on your wall and you tell them you got it at halfcocktails.com/shop.
Make the world beautiful again.
Make the world beautiful once more.
Buy our shit.
Ah, you know what else is for sale? Not just our shit.
Well, us ourselves. We are also ourselves full, for sale.
Definitely. It's capitalism. If you have a job, you're for sale.
That's for sure.
If you have a job, you're sold.
I was going to say, the finest snake oil this side of the Kuiper Belt.
Snake oil on sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
Okay, so I teased it earlier. Reba McEntire, what? The country music singer.
What? I can't believe you're going here.
Okay, when you say that, what?
First lady of country?
This actually came from a fact check on Snopes.
Okay.
The claim was country singer Reba McEntire is facing serious charges and asked for prayers regarding a lawsuit involving Fox News and one of its hosts, Martha McCallum. It was in April 2024, a paid advertisement with a photo of Reba McEntire was displayed on Facebook, claiming she faces these charges, prayers, yada, yada. If you clicked the link on Facebook, it took you to an article on a website that looked exactly like the FoxNews.com website.
Oh.
Had the logo, the colors, a byline showed by Britt Hume, the network's chief political analyst. The headline, Reba McEntire's solution to reverse dementia sparks huge lawsuit pressure on Fox. She finally fought back. That's the headline when you click this clickbait. So the article said Fox News host Martha McCallum planning on filing a lawsuit against both McIntyre and the network for violating some sort of contract, supposedly about Reba McIntyre's creation of products named either Maker's CBD Gummies or Bloom CBD Gummy.
Ooh.
Well, it was not a genuine Fox News article. Rest assured.
Figure. You mean there's another one out there?
There's another one.
I do hope that Reba is in the cannabis industry, however. I that would be nice.
Oh, heck yeah. I'd buy her stuff.
You'd buy her CBD gummies?
Absolutely. Right. Well, not CBD. They'd have to have something in them. CBD does nothing for me.
We did a story here about CBD doesn't work.
Yeah, really does. Not for me anymore.
Sorry. CBD doesn't work for pain. Works for epilepsy, not for pain. A bunch of double-blind studies showed that. Anyway, the article was on a scam website, the domain registrant in China. It was all bullshit, and they created the ad in the article, fooling people into believing the CBD was able to reverse dementia.
Wow.
And led people to sign up for monthly subscriptions to their CBD gummy products.
Wow.
So yeah, sadly, Reba doesn't do anything with CBD gummies, keto gummies, or similar products. Scammers are using her image and likeness to do scammers. Things such as this. They've apparently this scam has been similarly done with Oprah, Kelly Clarkson, Dr. Oz,
right?
Like that.
I mean, Dr. Oz has done his fair share of scamming. So.
Well, I mean, I can see why they choose them, because those people do have...
They promote shit, right?
Yeah, they do promote things that are, like, health-related, and so they are targets for the scammers to use.
Yeah, if you saw Dr. Oz linked to CBD gummies, you wouldn't think anything
right,
of it.
Right.
Reading this fact check earlier in the week, I was like, oh, shit, this is snake oil right here. Like, I didn't realize this.
For sure.
I get on Reddit. And that's about it. I'm only on the other stuff to share what I'm doing. I'm not on it as a user. I'm a drug pusher, not a user for Facebook. So this was news to me. This kind of scam, I hadn't heard about it. But it's kind of brilliant in how they're not liable for their claims because it's a fake news site.
Right.
They cover their tracks. They tracked it back to China, but that doesn't mean that's where it's from. That just means that's where the VPN led them to, right?
Right.
I don't know the process of hiding servers, but I'm sure you can do it. To think, yeah, they're not on the line for any of their completely false claims. Like, this would be false advertising.
Seriously.
If I have a CBD company and I claim that it reverses dementia, I can be sued. But these people, they can't be. What I actually believe we should be able to sue Facebook for allowing the ad.
Ooh. Right.
Like, that's where we have to stop it. It has to be up to Facebook to have responsible advertising in place. Because they'll let anybody.
You mean they can't just sit back and collect money? They have to actually do something?
Yeah, be responsible for the content. Like, here's the thing, is they claim we're not responsible for the content users post on our site. And they've hid behind that legal protection forever.
Right.
But they are responsible for the content they show on their site. And advertising is the content they show.
Right.
Absolutely.
Fucking fuckers. Anyway. That's our snake oil. Let's move on. Let's hit some fact checking time.
Oh no.
Here we go. What do you know? It's fact checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the quiz that all the kids call fact checking time.
All right, Amber, you weren't here last week, so we got to put you in the hot seat.
Yeah.
Why do you think I miss? No, I'm just kidding.
We got to get Poncho his wet food.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I love you, Poncho. I will do my very best.
It's fact checking time, the news show's quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something the media has actually deemed worthy of a true fact check. Playing today is Amber. You are playing for Poncho Cat, as always. He is the co-host of the Half Cocktails News Shorts, and whether you win or lose will decide whether he gets wet or dry food for dinner. So very high stakes. He is not a fan of dry food for dinner. And let me tell you, if you lose, because he will complain vocally. But not getting his wet food. So let me assure you, I want you to win. I really do.
Wait a minute. This could change things, seeing as you are my little brother. Do I want you to suffer or not?
Throw the game. Okay. Let's get to the game. I'm going to present to you a series of events and stories that were in the news this week, but only one of them was fact-checked by a media outlet. These might be articles. They might be social media posts. They might be interview quotes. But only some of them have been fact-checked. Okay, are we ready to begin?
Okay, we are ready.
All right. Either a woman tried to use her dead uncle to get a bank loan. This is completely separate from the man and woman that put their dead roommate in the truck and tried to withdraw the money from his bank account.
That was so crazy.
Weekend at Bernie's this year.
It's Bernie's year.
So, either a woman tried to use her dead uncle at a bank to get a loan, or Joe Biden said in a speech that his uncle was eaten by cannibals.
Oh, God.
Which was fact-checked because both happened.
Which one are people going to care to find out if it's true, and which are going to be... which article is going to be just swallowed as truth? Not checked. I'm going to say Biden was fact-checked.
Correct.
Oh!
He said in a speech in, I think, near the Philippines. It was overseas. His uncle in World War II, his plane went down, and Biden made a really bad joke. They never found his body, probably because he made it to an island and was eaten by cannibals. And people.
Can I just say, I love Biden even more now than I did before. I really love him much before, but now, that kind of dark humor is what I'm here for.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. The woman, she took her dead uncle into the bank, like inside the branch.
Oh my God.
Not to withdraw his money, but to get a loan. Now, this is. What? Alone? Oh, people are dumb. Okay.
Wow.
next round.
That's painful to hear.
Either an artist sold an invisible sculpture for $18,000, or a company is selling portable invisibility shields.
Okay, so I see we have now delved into the Emperor's new clothes, and no one has learned their lesson yet. God, which one would be fact-checked? I think they're going to fact-check the invisibility cloak, because people don't want their money to go to waste.
Generally speaking. Sorry, though. Sadly, that was not fact-checked. The artist was fact-checked.
Wow. Did he really sell an invisible sculpture?
Yes.
Like, did that really happen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I got my side gig. Woohoo!
All right, so...
I take invisible sculptures.
There is a company out there selling actual invisibility shields using modern technology. You can get it over on Kickstarter.
Wow.
The Invisibility Shield 2.0. It's not like... invisibility where you think like the superpower of invisibility, but you can actually have go look at the pictures. This guy has the shield and he's standing in front of stuff, but he's taller than the shield, so you can see like his feet and his head.
So it's not like Harry Potter's invisibility cloak.
Correct. You can tell a lot of times, you can tell there's something there. It's worth taking a look at the pictures they provide of the invisibility shield in action. It's impressive. You can tell there's something there. Wow. You definitely can't see the guy behind
it. Oh, that is so cool.
That's fantastic. No.
The artist was an Italian guy. He sold a piece called Lo Sono. Sold for 15,000 euros, about 18 grand, May 18th, 2021, during an art auction.
Wow.
And honestly, I think it just highlights the art world's ability to launder money more than anything else.
Seriously, that is just ridiculous.
The only reason I can think of buying an invisible sculpture for 18 grand is I'm giving this artist 18 grand for his art, and he'll give me back 16 grand of washed money. He makes money. Mm-hmm. I get clean money.
Mm-hmm.
Or I run the art house and I keep the commission, right? It's right. Bonkers.
Insane.
One for one. Last round. This is for all the wet food.
Come on. We're rooting for you, Poncho.
Oh, God. Come on, Poncho. I gotcha. I promise.
Okay. Either doctors in China held an online circumcision contest, or Playgirl once ran a Sleep with Donald Trump contest.
Oh, my God. Both.
Which was fact-checked because both are true.
This is a good one.
Oh, my gosh. This is a good one. Darn you. God, like, the idea of a circumcision competition.
Yeah. Between doctors.
Is horrifying.
I can cut that foreskin better than
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
But sleeping with Donald Trump believe it or not, is worse proposition. They're going to fact check Trump.
Poncho, you get your wet food.
Yay!
You got it.
You're welcome, Poncho. You can give me kisses next time I come.
In 1990, Playgirl magazine ran a Sleep with Donald Trump contest in their August 1990 edition. Okay, so what it actually was they were awarding a prize of his new book and a pillowcase with his face on it.
Even still, the fact that people would enter for that is just, I don't know. Speechless.
Just no.
There are no words.
The contest claimed it picked 25 winners, one for each million of his soon-to-be ex-wife Ivana's prenup agreement. Yeah.
He has to make his money somehow, I guess. Which begs the question, is Melania ready to leave him now that he's selling Bibles? Is that why he's selling Bibles? To make money to pay Melania? This might be his MO, I'm just saying.
No clue. But in China, the doctors actually did hold a online circumcision contest.
They did not.
They absolutely did. And so what it was each doctor recorded their own video of them performing the surgery. And recorded, and then afterwards recorded commentary about what they were doing and why. And
so basically play-by-play of the circumcision?
Correct.
There's a video to pull out at Christmas when Grandma comes over.
So not just anybody could access the video.
Like this one. Check this one. This is my favorite.
You had to be either a doctor competing or they had to limit the viewers to serious observers. So you actually had to get credentials to be able to log in and watch.
Well, I would hope so. Otherwise, it's a very disturbing new trend in porn.
So the fetishists that don't come in, huh?
So this is something their doctors are trying to do to promote positive sexual attitudes and acceptance of circumcision. And correct misconceptions. So it's seen as like a stunt where people aren't, they're not watching it, but they're hearing about it.
But circumcision is not necessary in the majority of cases. Right. Like, that's disturbing.
I don't know why China wants them to get their dicks cut. I don't know. But they they wanted these doctors to educate people that, because people in China actually believe circumcision boosts their sexual function.
There's also a little bit of a market in a lot of medical systems around the world of selling the foreskins to medical companies for skin grafts and things like that. So there is a monetary.
So therein lies the real reason.
Mm-hmm. Where, hey, give us some foreskins here.
Right. We need feel good, Dan. Hurry.
Yeah, let's.
On that note.
I called for a sip. Maybe even a hit. And join us for half.
Okay, so a new way has come along to heal broken bones faster. Ooh. And it might actually make them many times stronger.
Wow.
Up to three times stronger. Using plasma irradiation, Japanese scientists have found a way to promote faster bone healing in complex fractures. They successfully tested it in their lab rats. They found that they not only healed quicker, but the strength of the areas after radiation was 3.5 times stronger than the non-irradiated ones, and the strongest ones they found. Complex fractures are fucking horribly difficult to heal from. Let me tell you, because I got one in my right ankle as a 15-year-old, that to this day,
I remember that.
If I wear myself out, that's one of the first places I'll feel it.
Right.
No, I did not get irradiation. Team of researchers in Osaka Japan, at the Osaka Metropolitan University, came across this. One group of 24 animals had normal fractures, which are generally easy to heal. The other group of 20 had fractures, which are called non-union, which are the complex ones where healing is usually prolonged or doesn't even complete. Like a lot of these fractures, you know, it didn't heal right, so it just hurts the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
The irradiation didn't offer the normal fracture group any significant advantage. Like if it was just a clean break, like you don't get an advantage from it. But if it was where we would need it most, that's where it's most effective.
That is awesome.
In those complex ones, yeah, yeah, and stronger. It's amazing. They were irradiating the cells with plasma for 5 to 15 seconds, and they also found that the activity of a protein that indicates osteoblast differentiation increased. So that the indicating that the bone forming cells had actually been stimulated into working better.
That is amazing.
Really, really incredible stuff. And as we're watching all this technology that used to be science fiction, you know, literally used to be Dr. McCoy on Star Trek. Oh, you broke your bone? Well, let me wave this magic energy wand over it. There you go.
Good as new.
Good as new. Like, this is a step on that path right here. We're seeing it.
That would be so cool.
Right out of Japan. New way to heal broken bones. So
now that I would buy that medical device. I will not buy the circumcision trainer that Ron so helpfully just linked in the chat.
Okay, all I'm saying is if you're going to circumcise somebody, please buy the trainer first.
You know, you don't want to know what you're doing. Measure twice, cut once.
That's right. If you follow the link that's going to be in the episode description, there's actually a picture of one of the tools they use, and the article does talk about some of the details.
That is really neat, though.
No, like, thank you.
To be able to heal a bone.
Oh, I meant the circumcision stuff. You don't get any pictures of bones.
I purposely was changing the subject.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and on that note,
God,
we do have to wrap things up. Sadly, it's been a great time. I love you guys. You guys are great.
Love you.
Before we leave, I'd like to thank Rose Apothecary. You know, a place where people can come and get coffee or drinks, but it's not a coffee shop, nor is it a bar. It's kind of just an environment. Looks like we don't have any time left for the one ingredient heart doctors are begging people to add to their pizza. And I'm sorry, that's on me, folks. I apologize. I'm a windbag.
I probably didn't have it anyway.
Yeah, you don't have it in your fridge anyway. Gotta give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and the Social Contract, making Woo-hoo! Society better than anarchy and civil war for many of the last thousands of years. Any final thoughts or words before we say goodbye?
Well, you know, I hope you all had a nice 420 weekend. I know I did.
I am still enjoying my 420 weekend and probably will enjoy it every day for, I don't know, till next 420.
Every day's 420 weekend.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Have a wonderful day, folks. If you had a good time with us, you know what to do. Tell somebody that needs to hear us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. If you're in a giving mood, you can go over and show your support at Patreon or check out all the fine branded merch at halfcocktails.com/shop.
That's right.
We'll have all those links in the episode description. Thanks for stopping by. Go out and be well.
Live long and prosper.
There you go.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. Oh, we're just leaving you half-cocked. Half-cocked, half-cocked. Had a good time talking today, but even best times eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, oh, we're just leaving half-cocked.